Welcome to the Defining Endurance Podcast, a show focused on celebrating the everyday lives of athletes, coaches, and business owners. In this podcast, we break down both the applied science of training and the larger-than-life concepts of how people tackle their lives' biggest goals. We do this by embracing the mental, physical, and emotional demands of what it truly takes to be an endurance athlete. I'm your host, Andrew Simmons. I'm the head coach overseeing adult running programs Lifelong Endurance, as well as the head running coach at Peak Performance Running here in Golden, Colorado. Most importantly, I'm a lifelong student of endurance sports, interested in understanding how we can reach our personal athletic potential. I want to thank you for joining me. Now let's dive into this episode. All right, guys, thanks for joining us today on the Defining Endurance Podcast. Today, I've got a good friend of mine here, Dr. Riley. Dr. Riley is a sports rehab specialist and does his own thing with modern day Chiro. To give you guys a little bit of background on this guy, Dr. Riley earned his doctorate of chiropractic from Logan College of Chiropractic in St. Louis in 2013. From there, he also earned his master's in sports rehab after working with Dr. Craig Liebenson in Los Angeles, California. I see this guy much more as a sports rehab guy than a chiropractor, mostly just because the first thing you do is really kind of dive into the root of the problem and don't get right to, using chiropractic as the way of solving problems. Dr. Riley has spent the last several years really immersing himself in not just conservative management of injuries, but also pain management, biomechanics of running, and really kind of looking at the athlete and really getting to the root of the problem. Dr. Riley loves to use techniques like SFMA, which you're going to have to break down for me as to what that really means, to assess both biomechanical inefficiencies, as well as specializing in multiple treatments. I've seen you multiple times for everything from adjustments to dry needling to just talk about how my day's going, which I think is what makes you a little different than your everyday chiropractor. So, Dr. Riley, welcome.
Andrew, thank you.
If you guys haven't guessed yet, Dr. Riley is one of my close friends, both in the professional world. He works with a number of my athletes since he's joined us here in Colorado, but also off mic, pretty good buds, I'd like to think. Yeah?
Absolutely.
We get tacos now and again.
Dude, margaritas. I mean, that was, how many weeks ago was that? Too many weeks ago, first
it was.
Off. But yeah, man, I just love shooting the breeze with you.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm hoping to do today. I want to kind of bring the people into the world that you so wonderfully manage. I think when it comes to injuries, it's definitely an itchy, kind of uncomfortable place for people because I think people have this fallacy in their brain that they're going to go through their sport and their life without ever kind of hitting a bump with whether that's an inefficiency, a mistake in their training. And I think as a coach, there's also this tendency to assume that if we're doing it right, our athletes will never get injured.
Right.
Right. And so I think there's a big pressure to make sure that we're giving them enough, but oh gosh, not too much.
Yeah.
So I think I want to do things a little bit differently for this, for this one here. So I want to kind of bring people up to speed a little bit more on who you are. We know you do some chiropractic work. We know you're the sports rehab guy here. But when it comes to how you got there, I kind of want to break that down a little bit more. So we're going to take a page here and kind of go through the chapters of your life. So where did things really start for you? Where were you born?
I was born in a really small farm town in rural Illinois. It's about the southeastern kind of portion. It's a town called Olney, O-L-N-E-Y. And if you Google it later, guys, while you're listening to the podcast, you'll find that we are known for albino squirrels. And that is really about it.
Wow. So from the world of albino squirrels to... So that would be the first chapter, kind of born and raised there. What would chapter one or chapter two really...
Chapter two. So in terms of kind of growing up there, like that was from the years of, you know, infancy till I did 2 years of, I got my associates there locally at a junior college and then transferred. So that's kind of where I started to get closer to St. Louis. I went to an undergrad that was Southern Illinois University of Edwardsville, where I went pre-med. That's just right outside of St. Louis. It's on the Illinois side. But yeah, I was there for a couple more years, and that's when I decided, like, okay, well, I want to do something in the medical world. I kind of grew up around my mom. She's a nurse. And so there was always that intrigue of, like, the human body and kind of figuring things out. And my mom's also a very caring individual. And so that kind of imparted on me, too, that I wanted to do something to where I'm helping in some service capacity with that person. So, yeah.
So take me back to kind of chapter one there. Were you, did you play sports as a kid?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Everything?
All the time. It was always either going to be, I mean, soccer was my longest love. But there was a couple years where I tried flag football. Baseball was always something that I played through high school. I even did, so 1 year in high school was my junior year. I did soccer and cross country in the same season. And I don't know if I've ever been that skinny in my entire life. I was ripping through calories. But yeah, dude, I played basketball too. So it was anything that was outside, man, I was doing it.
That's awesome. So for those that don't know, Dr. Riley is, I think, still celebrating a little LA Dodgers win there. So big baseball fan, big LA fan, which I think probably, you know, got even more ingrained in you. Were you always a Dodgers fan?
Dad raised me as a Dodgers fan.
Okay. 100%. So going to LA was just a little cherry on top.
Man, like, talk about an experience. Like, just being able to work under Dr. Craig Levinson. So if you guys aren't really familiar with him in terms of PT chiropractic world, he's definitely one of the prime players. And just having that opportunity to be able to go there and work under him for a little while was amazing. But yeah, absolutely. Being in Los Angeles and then actually going to Dodger Stadium and sitting in the outfield with all the fans who are just diehard Dodger fans. Absolutely.
Like, that's
goosebumps, man.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So from LA, that would probably be, where does that fit in the chapter? So chapter two, we were kind of in the, you know, growing up stages, getting into St. Louis. How do we get from St. Louis to LA?
Kind of like we were talking about right before this. I mean, hard work, obviously, but I have a good quote, and one of my friends actually in grad school said, it's who you know that'll get you there. It's what you know that'll keep you there. And luckily for me, like, I wouldn't consider myself off-putting, so I like to talk to people and that sort of stuff. And I was meeting the right kind of crowd at grad school because, to be quite honest, when I went to grad school, chiropractic school, if you will, I didn't know if I was going to, like, fit. The traditional model of chiropractic doesn't necessarily sit well with how I view my philosophy of how I practice, and most of the schooling today still kind of takes the traditional form. But you kind of have to look outside of that and find your niche and your group at school. Otherwise, you're going to be feeling like you're on an island, really.
Right, yeah. Right. Lonely Island.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So with that said, so we're in LA now. When you and I met, you know, we met actually over Instagram, believe it or not, and you were in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
So you went coast to coast.
Oh, baby. Absolutely.
How'd that happen?
So how it kind of transformed is when I finished up with Craig in LA, kind of the philosophy was actually Denver was on the shortlist. In fact, really funny story real quick. As I was coming back from LA, driving back to Illinois, I stopped in Salt Lake, and then I was like, oh man, like, Denver's always been really cool to me. But at the time, like, when you're in school, everybody's talking about, oh, Denver's super competitive and, like, might not do well if you go there and stuff like that. But I always had the fascination with Denver area. And so I stopped for 2 days. On the way from Salt Lake to Denver, I took the, basically from the north, coming up through Wyoming and down. Woo, white knuckle driving, brother. Like, getting into Wyoming was like, oh, not too bad. middle and end of Wyoming, I'm like, this is where I die, on the interstate with a blizzard.
Yeah, a little windy.
But ended up in Nashville and kind of met this other doctor who kind of practiced the same way, so that's how I ended up there.
That's awesome. Yeah. So you made your way out to Denver then.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, we're on chapter 5, chapter 6
at this point. Oh, buddy, yeah, we're halfway through the book. I practiced in Nashville area for, ended up being about 4 years, and then the joke I always make is that my wife is from California. We actually met in Nashville, but she wanted to be closer to home. I didn't want to be that close to her home, so we kind of found this nice little middle ground. That's nice. A complete joke, Hillary, if you do listen to that.
Love it, love it. So I'm going to take the people back to about two years ago now, I think, when you first came here. 3 years? Are we at 3 years now?
We're going to be verging on that pretty stinking soon.
Pretty stinking soon. So when I first met Dr. Riley, it was like, hey, so I'm moving out here, and you seem like a guy that I should know. And it was just kind of from that point, we kind of made it as a way of connecting. I remember when you got out here, we just sat down and just talked about, hey, let's talk about what your beliefs are. It wasn't even like, you know, anything more than just, you know, a true conversation, just like we're having right now about, so what do you do? How do you do, like, what do you do here and how does that work? And to kind of give background to the people at the time, I had just really kind of gotten into a groove with our youth running program, Peak Performance Running. And I was really looking for someone to partner with and not just have it as an exchange of, here's an athlete, and then bring them back to me fixed. I think one of the things that has been beautiful about our relationship, and this is really, I think, one of the most important pieces of the relationship of athletes, coaches, and kind of building that team, is that I know that if I send an athlete to you, you're going to communicate back with me and kind of keep me in the loop and the dialogue of what's really happening with that athlete. And what I have found is that over the years, we've been able to take that from something that's very local. Like my local athletes in Golden, I've been able to send to Dr. Riley, and I know that not only are they going to have an amazing experience with you, they're also going to be able to see the benefits of that work with you relatively quickly. Again, that's, you know, case by case, but sure, we were able to take that same model and same kind of cohesive relationship there and take it worldwide. You've worked with my athletes in, I think, Germany, in Switzerland, you know, athletes that are all over the world. And it's really made it such a cool thing because you, as much as you do in the office there, you can do so much virtually. And I think with the times of COVID,
oh, yeah, big time,
you've had to, you know, kind of move virtually.
Adaptation, baby.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that I think is the word for you, man. I think the whole thing that comes to my mind in terms of the work that you do with people is adapting. Cause so much of it is about stimulus and kind of like, hey, how do we work through this? So one of the things I kind of want to talk through and kind of get into the nitty gritty side of things a little bit, is really kind of the idea of, first and foremost, is that most people see you first because of injuries. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe even backing up there a little bit, the most of the people that you work with are runners. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say the largest population that I work with are runners.
And was that always the case?
Not exactly. So when I first started out, my first job, it was pretty well, pretty broad scope. It wasn't until like maybe the back end of finishing up at my first clinic that I worked at where I started to work a little bit more exclusively with CrossFit style athletes, but like overhead athletes a little bit too, just the overall athlete.
Mm.
And then I would say when I started my second job in the Nashville area, that's where I kind of started to pick up a little bit more of the running community and that sort of thing. It's not to say that my first job I wasn't seeing runners, because I absolutely was, but it really started to take shape more in that maybe like year three.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, I think, If you're talking to athletes broadly right now, and we're talking about injury, I think the biggest struggle there is that return to injury and the pain management. And I think one of the things I've learned in working with you is that the goal of coming back from an injury is not to feel no pain.
Yeah.
How would you describe to anybody that's maybe working through an injury right now or is recently kind of coming back from an injury, how do you try to describe that idea of pain management returning from an injury?
I think a lot of it, honestly, Andrew, comes down to the element of your perception of control. Yeah. How can you manage? Can right. you manage that pain that you currently have to right. be able to do the activity that you're wanting to do or some modification of it? Because if so, then we're actually doing more help than harm by doing that. I mean, you got to think about this psychological element of that sort of stuff too. Like when you talk about a runner especially and we're taking away running from that person, that may be their lifeline.
Right. Their stress, right? That may be how they're limiting stress, especially during times of COVID.
Yeah.
If you have someone that's injured, and I'm sure that you know only made it more difficult without being able to see face-to-face patients, you know, let's get nitty-gritty for the people a little bit. So if you have an athlete that's come to you and say, hey, my knee pain, you know, it can get to a point where I got to stop running. And then, you know, you might work with them for a little bit and they're going to kind of bounce back. Where do you set that limiter for them? Hey, I want you to stop and walk, or I want you to like, how do you look at the alternative side of training and like what limiters do you set in that range?
What a great question. You know, I think the details don't need to be very complicated because I think one of the main concepts that I try to impart on everybody that I work with is some element of self-efficacy and just like awareness of your body. The more you can kind of gain from that, the better off you're going to be the next time and the next time, because, you know, like we talked, running, inevitably you're going to get injured. It's all just a matter of how much control can we have to limit the severity or intensity of it, right?
Right.
So that it doesn't get in our way of what we're trying to do. So a lot of the concepts that I work with on the runners especially is we use a little bit of a modifiable pain scale. I know we all are very familiar with the traditional medical model of the visual analog scale, the 1 to 10, right?
Right.
Well, the problem is that doesn't apply to everybody. It's very right. subjective. And so I try to make it as personal to them to be have more clarity
sure.
when they're trying to return to running. And that may be something that maybe it's a walk-run strategy at first. Maybe it's just long-duration walking at first, in fact. If you can walk and have no pain, great. If you can walk and run and have little to no pain, even better. And then that we just keep progressing that ladder up until you get to a point where I can run for X number of miles and not feel pain.
Right.
And it's okay to feel a little bit of pain, but whenever it's, you know, like you said with the example of the person limping, that clearly is interfering with what's going on.
Right.
And
right.
recovery is not allowing us to have enough time to be able to continue the progression of training that we're trying to do. So we got to intervene some way.
So I think one of the things that I see your clients talk a lot about is the idea that the first thing you do is not take away.
When it comes to your health and longevity, you hold nothing back. You understand what it means to push harder, reach farther, and go the extra mile. This relentless drive runs in your blood. That's why Inside Tracker provides you with a personalized plan to build strength, speed recovery, and optimize your health for the long haul. Created by leading scientists in aging, genetics, and biometrics, Inside Tracker analyzes your blood, DNA, and fitness tracking data to identify where you're optimized and where you're not. You'll get a daily action plan with personalized guidance on the right exercise, nutrition, and supplementation for your body. And when you connect Inside Tracker with your Fitbit or Garmin, you'll unlock real-time recovery pro tips after you complete your workout. It's like having your own personalized trainer and nutritionist in your pocket. For a limited time, you can get 20% off the entire Inside Tracker store. Just go to insidetracker.com/defining endurance. That's insidetracker.com/defining endurance.
Run it.
110%. I always say that. I'm like, I'm the last person that's going to tell you to completely stop running.
And I think where, and again, I'm probably going to take some heat for this, but I think most of the time when I talk with athletes, their PCP, primary care provider, is going to jump in and say, hey, got to stop right now. Got to stop what you're doing. And do you think that when you get somebody that says, okay, I got to stop, we end up kind of creating this mental barrier.
Big time.
Right? And I think part of the beauty in the work that you do, because what I want the listeners to really understand is that so much of Jesse's job isn't just about giving you clamshells and then, you know, giving these exercises with circle bands that's going to jump you back. I think the third element here, and kind of when you break the fourth wall and get into people's brain and kind of have that narrative, is when you get to the psychological standpoint of what they do. So when you're working on that, I mean, are you saying to athletes like, hey, I want you to think about your pain this way? I want you to kind of, when you feel this, do this, right? Like we go back to the old psychology model of when someone hurts your feelings, right? You're like, when you do this, it makes me feel.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so how do you blend the psychological with the chiropractic and the rehab?
Yeah, dude. I think human behavior is so fascinating to me. And kind of jumping back on what we're talking about, you know, with PCPs telling people to just not run at all. How would you feel if I said, don't? Just right. With anything, right?
Yeah.
It makes you want to do it even more.
Absolutely.
And so human behavior to me, again, such a fascinating thing that when I'm trying to work with that individual, I think some level of, you know, modification or moderation or whatever you want to call it is usually the best way to go about it. You know, obviously we have to have some expectations set too. So again, if that person is in an acute enough state, then perhaps maybe, again, walking is the best for the current time, or some modification with shoes, or maybe some inserts, or change of where you're running. Mm. Like, there's so many different variables that we can manipulate. But I think the biggest thing that I try to impart with people is the more we get acquainted with our pain and all the things that come with pain, fear, what have you, the more we can get accustomed to being comfortable and more acquainted to knowing what it's like and what we can and can't necessarily push.
Right, because I think pain and the management therein is the elephant in the room.
Big time.
Right? Like, I think so many patients, you know, it's not a lack of range of motion and it's not a lack of desire. It's really about how do they manage those emotions and those feelings.
Yeah.
They'll do the exercise. They'll do the work if they understand that it also matters to you that they get that work done. And I think that is such a silver lining that goes so much deeper into the patient care model.
Yeah, big time.
And I think is really why we align, I think, as, you know, sports rehab and coach, because so much of what I do in my work as a coach isn't just programming. It's so much more about knowing what the needs of my athletes are and really saying, you know, and looking at what are the next couple of weeks, how does that look like in terms of stress? Where you're doing pain management, a lot of what I'm doing is life management and then fitting, you know, their running or their sport within their life, right? And not trying to pinch it in, but like, how do we make room and make this a really enjoyable experience? How do we make them walk away going, all right, every time I want to go and get ready for an event, those are the people that I want to work with.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you do such a great job in going from, okay, my injury is managed. Now how do I, and so I think this is a great, great turning point, is that how do you get athletes to understand that maintenance is important? And I think you and I have talked, and we've done this with our Robust Runner program in the past, it's that bridge, right? And I think for the listeners that are out there, what we mean by the bridge is that under a traditional PT model, we're not building, or PTs aren't always striving, right? Because whether this is a hospital-based model with physical therapy or a, I guess, kind of third-party way that you're going to go see someone because your knee hurts, their goal isn't to get you back to your training load. It's simply just to get you back to normal range of motion and function. And so we then have this huge bridge between, okay, your knee moves fine, and you can do these three things without pain, then to the doctor and the physical therapist, your needs are met, right? Mm-hmm. And they usually have about 8 visits to do that.
Yeah.
Right? And so...
High stress, man. Been
right,
there.
Right. And it's extremely hard. It doesn't serve the patient as well, because you either have to hit fast forward and you can't take the time to kind of work them through that, because I think you've had patients where you've been able to solve the problem in 2 visits.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes you 18 visits
to
get to the actual root cause of what's happening, because you're kind of peeling back the layers of that onion.
Oh, big time.
So when we talk about that bridge being built, you're not the traditional physical therapist in the office with another group of physical therapists. You kind of have this really cool job of being able to kind of dictate the model of how you work with your patients. Yeah. So kind of describe to me that when you get a new patient, how do you assess what's happening, right? Because you and I have talked, and I've seen you on Instagram talk, you know, about knee pain. We're going to use that as an example.
Sure.
Because the knee's rarely at fault here.
Oh, yeah, rarely at fault. But it, statistically speaking, it is the most injured joint of a runner. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
And so when you're looking at whether it's knee pain, ankle pain, or foot pain, where do you start?
So obviously, I'm going to try to throw you for a loop here. I'm going to start with the person.
Hey, there we go.
Hey, I didn't see that coming.
Did not see that coming.
So aside from that, kind of how we go from point A to point B is obviously, like I said, I start with the subjective. I'm trying to see, is there anything from like, okay, so to lay it out, how I practice is what's called a biopsychosocial model. And so what that essentially means is 3 elements of our life kind of dictate how we feel, think, all those sorts of things. And the bio part is more of the anatomy, moving around, that sort of thing. What are we doing for training? And the psychosocial aspects are, you know, clearly how do I feel internally about myself? And then how do I feel internally about the rest of the world kind of situation is more the sociology type perspective. So in the subjective part, I'm trying to garner some of that psychosocial aspect. And a little bit of the bio. And then once we get you moving around, that's when I can kind of dictate, okay, as far as the mechanism of what's maybe creating this pain or sensation, I can give you a pretty good layout based on how you're moving. And most of these tests that I'm going to be having you do are pretty applicable to running form and those sorts of things that factor in to what running is.
So it's pretty fair to say that before you have anybody stand, walk, or run to move, you're looking at the human that you have in front of you first.
Big time.
And I mean, just kind of having been in office with you before, we've had an hour-long session where the first half an hour is just talking about how you're feeling.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, you know, anybody that's out there, it's like, man, that seems like a huge waste of time. I mean, I have to look at it also from the standpoint of customer service. Because where I'm feeling these things and how I'm managing them, I think a lot of people don't understand how stress can be manifested.
Big time.
Into what that injury really is. Mm-hmm. And it may be that the injury is a very small portion of what the person's actually going through. And I think this is kind of a great, you know, transition for us to kind of talk about load and overload.
Yeah.
That if there was like one thing that I would say you're known for, it's the load overload discussion.
Yeah.
And so kind of bring people into that world that where are most injuries coming from a load overload perspective?
Yeah. And I think it's the easiest way to really explain pain, honestly. And that goes just with stress type pain too. So my concept that I use is load versus capacity. So load... think about it in terms of both of these sitting on like a teeter-totter or a weight scale or something along those lines. Load is how much stress we're placing on a particular area of our body. Let's just say it's the knee again, or maybe just our body in general. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's where stress and all that kind of stuff can come in. And then on the other side, we have capacity. So that's how much can that area or the body as a whole tolerate with load in that given amount of time. And so when we... very much overload. So when load is heavily exceeding what capacity is, that's when we kind of go into that red zone, right? Mm-hmm. That's where we're getting outside of what our body is necessarily comfortable with. And that's where we're kind of flirting with injury. However, something that I always explain to people too, load can't exceed capacity. In fact, if it didn't, we wouldn't be training. Right. We wouldn't get stronger. We wouldn't get faster. We wouldn't get more endurant and all those sorts of things. And so to some degree, we have to have that exchange, but we want it to be relatively close in balance, right?
Right. And there has to be a recovery absorption period within that. And so this is where we talk about the ideas and training and concepts of periodization, where we may slowly increase that load.
Yeah.
And then that absorption phase, right? So that down week is kind of where we're kind of building the bigger bucket, if you will, right? That capacity gets greater. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I think people really get it kind of messed in their head is, well, why wouldn't I just keep training? Isn't capacity going to follow? And I think this is where that half an hour conversation of kind of digging in and saying, okay, what's your real capacity right now?
Yeah.
Is it an overload perspective of life? Or is it an overload perspective of mileage and vert and speed?
Yeah.
Right? And then is that why we're having an issue of not being able to make things happen the way that we want them to? So yeah. I think that load capacity discussion is one that I think we'll continue to have on this podcast. Because it's at the root of it, it's training. Load versus capacity is the root of it. And it's not just injuries.
Yeah.
It's also about how do we build that athlete.
Well, something that you just kind of mentioned that I'll kind of build on just a little bit here, like there is another concept of what is called acute and chronic workload. And acute workload, you're kind of thinking more in the, you know, the past couple weeks versus chronic, like what has your program been doing? So you may think like, well, my program's set up perfectly. Well, not if you're, you know, busy at work and getting 3 hours of sleep and eating candy bars for dinner. And, you know, I'm obviously embellishing this a ton here, but you get what I'm saying. That's where the acute part comes in.
Right.
Like, you know, you got to monitor both.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's one of the beauties is that our chronic training load is effectively our fitness, if we think about it. And that acute training load is kind of looking at how does this day or this week impact that long-term fitness.
Yeah.
And I think what people don't realize is that there can often be an exchange that if you're making too much of a priority in trying to get that 80-mile weekend, let's say, during a week of high stress and things, it may not net the normal benefits of an 80-mile week if your body's already under stress, because it may result in that injury. Whereas if you would have just given yourself a little bit of grace and said, okay, I got a lot going on in my life right now. I'm going to drop it down to 50.
Yep.
And you'll come out of the week and say, okay, now I can do this 80-mile week next week, or I can continue to kind of build and progress. It's about making sure that we create an adaptable, not only training program from my standpoint, but also an adaptable program in terms of how are you bringing that athlete back from that injury, and how do we not do that again? How do we not repeat these things?
Yeah, for sure.
I love this. This is such a, I know we could go you know, on and on about
it. You want to make a 2-hour podcast?
I do not. I don't think listenership would not go
no,
up.
No, probably tank.
Probably tank. So I think one of the things that I really want to understand is that when you get to a point where you're able to kind of niche into that, and I think that you and I have had some great discussions about how do we really find the people that understand what we do, right? I think it's fair to say that you don't work with people that are rehabbing their wrists too often. You're more working with a population that is distinctly runners.
Yeah.
What was your biggest fear in moving to just runners early on?
Ooh. If we want to get raw, buddy.
Let's
like inadequacy, right?
Yeah.
Like, do I feel like I have enough knowledge to be able to work exclusively with a certain population? And clearly, like, you know, like with any athlete or really with any person, like if you're in pain, your expectation is I want to get out of this as fast as possible, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, like we just talked about, sometimes it's a lot faster than what we think it might be. And sometimes it's a lot longer than what we expected it to be. And so I think some of those things kind of definitely entered into my mind initially, but I think that's where my strong suit is in being able to work with the individual that's in front of me. You don't necessarily have to be, you know, I'm not some Olympic qualifying runner.
Right. And I think so much of what we see as both coaches and as professionals in our world is, well, I have to have at least, you know, I have to have a Team USA jersey. I've got to have been, you know, this superb runner. And that only once you've achieved this level of physical aptitude that, you know, then you can start to tell people how to do their work. And I think that that style of thinking undermines not only the years of education you spent, but I think what is almost more powerful is it's the number of hours, right? And so I think this kind of goes back to a quote that I'm surely going to botch here, but we'll make fun for the listeners, is that, you know, the person you should fear the most isn't the one that's practiced 10,000 kicks, right? It's the person who's practiced one kick 10,000 times, right? And I think so much of what you have done is that as you've niched down, you've now got a way of saying, okay, it used to take me, you know, three visits to really get to the root of things. And you've taken that understanding of what a runner's normally dealing with. And you can say, okay, in that first visit, I can pretty easily tell what's going on here.
Yeah.
And then you're able to kind of dial out and say, okay, here's how we're going to take care of this.
Yeah.
And you really sped things up. But I think in battling that inadequacy, do you ever really find yourself like maybe not getting the respect that you wanted? Or is it more of a slow transition of watching more people kind of say, hey, this is the dude?
Yeah, isn't that funny? Like, I think to me, you know, if you really wanted to sit down and nitpick, of course, you could probably find some things that, but I feel like I would probably be misinterpreting that situation. But to answer your question just blanketly, no, I don't think I've ever necessarily ran into a situation where the person sitting across from me that might be a running athlete is questioning me on my times and my paces and what races have I done and stuff like that. Again, you know, at that point, it's more about, you know, what do you know in terms of the biomechanics that are integrated into the sport of what running is.
Right.
And to me, I'm such a nerd with learning and biomechanics that a lot of my time is kind of dedicated to learning that anyway. So
right. So we're gonna dig a little deeper into the emotional side because you're in touch with it, I think, a little bit. So for you to kind of get into that comfort level, you know, we talk about who did you have to become to feel confident with also putting that out there. I think I've seen from you is you've gotten much more comfortable in your social media talking not only about who you are, but also the struggles therein. What did you feel like you had to, you know, everybody talks about who'd you have to become, but in some ways, like, what did you have to give up, feelings or emotions, in those early days of, like, whether that's on your social media or be kind of becoming the running sports rehab guy? What did you have to give up?
Is it okay to use a curse word on
you? Yeah, go for it.
I just had to give up the bullshit.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, you know, I would consider myself a likable individual, and I think that I've always known that, but at the same time too, like, I struggle with, you know, anxieties and, imposter syndrome and things of that nature all the time. And I'm getting obviously better at it because I'm trying to work on letting that stuff go.
Right.
You know, I'm going to be always really crappy at math. I'm not very good at math.
Right.
Well, that's probably why I picked science, right? So it's just stuff like that where you have to be comfortable with who you are and how you're growing through life and kind of what you're learning and just making sure that it's true to who you are and what you speak on. And so that's why I'm always open and became more open, I should say, about that sort of stuff socially, because I think that that also matters from a pain perspective.
Right. I was going to say, this sounds a lot like patience.
Let's bring it back to runners again with social media, taking a little pic with your time on the watch. And like, just thinking in the grand scheme of things, like, there may be some person that's following you that's looking at that, that's like, oh man, like, I didn't do that. Like, I wish I could do that. And that eats away at a lot of people. Whenever in reality, like, does it really necessarily matter what your time is, or are you doing it because you love what you're doing?
Right. And we could get into a whole conversation about, like, diving into your personal why of what you do.
Yeah.
And I think this actually brings us back to, at least from the podcast perspective, of why we're doing this. And so I'm going to ask the tough question right now is, you know, this podcast is called the Defining Endurance Podcast. Mm-hmm. And so we've had a chance to kind of look at where you started from, both as a young boy.
Young lad.
A young lad. And then transitioning into, you know, going to LA, and then now you're in Nashville, and then now you're in Denver. And I can see a lot of ways that we can draw some lines, but the big question here is, so how do you really define endurance?
I was hoping you would frame the question in that way, because when you sent me, you know, when we were talking about the topics and stuff like that, I read that and I was like, that could just be a general question for everybody that you have on here.
Yeah.
And so my interpretation is, how long can an individual remain around steady state for the longest period of time that they can?
Yeah. Okay. And what is, when you say steady state, bring the people a little more into that.
That's what I'm talking about when we're talking about juggling, you know, the stresses in your life and being able to say, all right, well, work right now is super stressful for me. I need to acknowledge that. I understand that it may not be forever this way.
Yeah.
But things like running and stuff like that, I just have to proceed with a little bit of caution to make sure that I'm not getting out of my AKA steady state.
Right.
Because when push comes to shove, the world is always going to, or biology is always going to win, I should say.
Right.
And so for me, as long as you're aware, you have that self-awareness, that emotional intelligence to be able to, AKA, again, cut through the bullshit.
Right.
And just be honest with yourself.
Right.
You're going to have way less of a hard time proceeding through life.
Yeah. I've always brought back this principle to my athletes, and I call it the ABCs of running, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not like three things. It's just always be in control.
Yeah.
Right. And that's like, you only control so many things as an athlete, right? And this is your emotions, right? And this is often your perceptions. But then also, how are you, you know, dealing with those things, right? And controlling that, I've had a really stressful day, and going out and moving for a half an hour and not going drastically in the other direction and going out for a 15-mile run because you're stressed out and you gotta stomp it out. And then you can't work out for 3 days because you're so sore. Or you go lift so hard because you're like, well, I'm feeling this injury. I gotta do something about it. Mm-hmm. So to me, I think when what you really said there is that it's about kind of finding that, and I think for some people it's flow state, but also kind of that like, that place of being where you can kind of oscillate, right? You can kind of go up and down. There's going to be some ups and downs. You're going to have your good days and your bad days. But by majority, kind of finding that place that you don't hit the ceiling and smack right into an overload, right? And, you know, give yourself too much, but then you're also not on the floor and totally just like in pieces, right? And so I feel like that's kind of when you say endurance. Mm-hmm. What you're really saying is finding that place where you can stay for a long time and trying to find that true balance in both in life and in sport. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome.
It would be like, it's okay to be in a point where maybe I want to, you know, put some EDM on and go oomph. But also maybe it's cool to listen to James Taylor.
Right.
Kind of just chill out for a little bit
too. Right.
And so, yeah, absolutely. Being able to navigate between those two and being okay with both. Absolutely. The flow, as you said.
I think it's finding that. I think that's such a big rhythm in life.
You do such a good job with imparting that on the kids you work with,
too. Oh, thanks, man. You appreciate that. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I think it's I think if there's one thing I can give most kids as they're going through their high school years is just understanding that, like, if you can find balance mm-hmm. – everything else will be really easy. So much more comes in life. But if you're going through these drastic, like, you know, feast and famine type things where you're like, you're running like 100 miles a week, but then like you're injured and you can only do 10 to 15 miles a week, then you go right back to like, no, man, like, just let's find that like place where you can oscillate between and keep something really consistent, right? Yeah. You know, we go back to control, right? It's control.
I was about to mention that again.
Yeah. No, dude, I love it. I love it. Man, I know we could talk for, you know, hours and hours. I think the exciting thing, and those that have listened this long, I think one of the things that's really fun is Dr. Riley isn't just going to be an episode on this. We talked about kind of being able to kind of answer and impart some questions. So you guys will see that as this podcast unfolds, you'll be hearing this voice a little more often to kind of help answer questions that you guys, the listeners, have. And we will get some more information out to that community in the coming months about kind of how we're doing this and how we're actually going to kind of take it back to old style radio and say,
yeah, maybe.
You know, first time caller, long time listener.
I feel like how we're set up is almost like an NPR station.
It is, right? Yeah, I'm Terry Gross. No, that's Lexi's job to be Terry Gross. I'll never be able to do that. But what I want to do right now is just kind of understand a little bit more about what do you have going on like right now. This, to give the listeners an idea, we're recording this on Election Day.
Ooh, yeah.
Which is, I think the, if we talked about anxiety levels, I think they're
at an all-time.
Absolutely. So we don't even know the outcome right now.
No.
Yeah. So with that said, knowing that we're going to be releasing these into 2021, what do you got going on?
What do I have going on? I would say the biggest projects that I have going on right now. So another thing, guys, I'm really not good at is WordPress. And so basically what I'm working on right now, guys, is I have a couple digital resources that I want to put out on my website. So right now it's I've got those finished. I'm starting to try to integrate those in terms of, you know, for all the WordPress nerds out there, WooCommerce, and integrating that with my payment system and that sort of thing. So got that in the works, getting a blog on the site put together. And then a lot of the other stuff that I've got in the books is just a lot of digital resource stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's so cool because a lot of what I'm encountering at clinic or online with people, ideas come to mind in terms of like, well, you're not the first person that said that. I need to do something about that. So
right.
That we can optimize this timeline that we have. Mm. And so a lot of it's going to be, you know, either free or small fee kind of situation where it's going to revolve around, again, running athletes and just common injuries that runners face.
Love it. Yeah. So where can they find that?
Oh, absolutely.
In the show notes that we're going to put out there, where can people find you, at least on the web? We'll get to Instagram and Facebook in a second.
Okay. So website is www.moderndaychiro.com, CHIRO.com.
Love it. And kind of a big deal on the gram, huh?
I'm trying, man. It's hard out there.
It's hard out there, man. Algorithms.
All about them, for sure. Yeah, Instagram, it really started, that was before I got here in Denver. So I actually had a really good buddy of mine who still lives in Nashville. His name's Zach Henderson. He's a trainer there. Every Sunday, we would get together and just shoot some videos at the place that we worked. And that would consist of the rest of that week. And then just every week, we'd follow up and do something. And so, yeah, I mean, I just like kind of helping explain things in a simpler way to people. I think that's the biggest thing is we've made pain and injury and all this stuff way too complex.
Mm.
And so my job that I've kind of imparted on myself is to help simplify all of that. So again, that
and using Instagram as that platform.
For sure. And I think the biggest reason why, again, it kind of goes back to about the fear element of pain. Like if you don't know something, like you're going to have a little bit more apprehension, right?
Right.
And so my job is to help acquaint people with being okay in that state and how to navigate through it.
Right on. And where can they find you?
So on Instagram, it is docjessereily. And that's, I think, with Twitter as well. Twitter, it's normally I'm just liking things, but
I do
share some things on Instagram onto Twitter.
I'm an Instagram guy. I just never got into Twitter.
Yeah. Twitter to me is more just like, I like to see, what's trending and that sort of stuff, but Instagram, yeah, absolutely. It's where I spend the majority of my time.
Yeah. And you're pretty, pretty, I guess, active there. You're doing some live work. You're also doing some presentations with other groups and things. Mm-hmm. So if you guys are looking for really good information about both just general sports rehab stuff, but also I think in a way, I think what you do really well is frame it up for people about, hey, think about it this way, or look at things from my point of view. You do a phenomenal job on the Instagram with that. So I think that's really, really wonderful Well, I think we're at that time.
Are we?
Yeah. Oof. I know. Right. I feel like we could have gone for forever here, but maybe this. I don't think this is going to be the last time.
Oh, no. Part one.
Part one. I love it. To be continued. No, but guys, I really appreciate you guys sticking around and listening. Everything that Jesse mentioned in here, both from his resources to links to his social media accounts, will be available in the show notes, both on the lifelongendurance.com site as well as in the Facebook group. If you guys have not yet joined, I highly encourage you guys to take a quick hot lap on Facebook, search up the Lifelong Endurance Athletes and Coaches group. That is where we have all of our athletes. This is where our coaches live as well, so it's a great place to ask questions, interact, and really find a community that is about what you're about. With that said, you can also find more about the podcast on Instagram. Lifelong_endurance is where we will be posting some sound bites and some information when this episode is released. So I really appreciate you guys giving us your ears here for the better part of 48 minutes. And we look forward to having you guys back next week. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks, guys.